SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two, Jay Hubdy joining us, and now Nick Tamaro. And Nick, an unprecedented third visit of the week after some help for those that were playing Fonner on Tuesday, and then Nick delivered, which ended up being a double the parlay payout in that pick five carryover at Tampa. Nick, well done.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
Good, 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 good. Nice work on Wednesday, and you know that paid very well. I mean, I know it chalked out, but am I right? Twice the parlay I came up with.
Yeah, I mean, given how heavily bet every winner was, I thought the payout was pretty amazing. I think that, you know, some of it has to do with the late odds fluctuations intra race, and maybe that those aren't quite the greatest or most accurate representation of what the actual prices are in the multi. For example, I think the seventh race winner went off 7-5, but everything in terms of the picks had him in the second choice, the Jane Chiavelli horse Amelia's Wild Ride, a little bit closer in odds. So I think that may have been a situation where it was a tad skewed. But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, the sequence, at least from my perspective, was, I was glad to have hit it, of course, but it was frustrating because the second place finisher in the fifth race was 12-1, and the winner, of course, was, I think, 3 or 4 to 5, and I had treated them equally. So that was, you know, not exactly what you want. And then I liked Windfall Profit in the last, who came up a head short, and that obviously was a little unfortunate as well. So, you know, one of those sequences where it was good to get out of it successful, but it felt like it could have been quite a bit, you know, if not just a little bit better.
Well, and the point that I made on Thursday after that pick five, the flood of money and the attempt to include horses on tickets, you know, that would really make the play sing, that also ends up, you know, being extraneous, you know, dead money too. And as a result, that's how you know, even when it chalks out, you still got paid. And you know what's amazing, and I only know this because of you know, us talking during the sequence, but Windfall Profit and the winner in that maiden nightcap, they were separated, I think, by what? $1? They were 3-1 and 4-1, essentially, and yet there was a big spread on them in the will pays.
Yeah, $900 for $2 was the difference, so it was pretty significant, especially if you were pulling for Windfall Profit. But yeah, it was a huge difference, and you know, coming into the looking at the will pays and coming into that last race, I really wasn't sure how it was going to get bad. And I thought that maybe Windfall Profit, looking at those, could be 6 or 7 to 1. But I think the best way to look at it is what you were just alluding to, which is that when you get a good competitive sequence of races, you're going to force people to use more horses than they would in a scenario where they could zero in on one or two horses. And granted, the second winner was a pretty short price. That was also a pretty bulky field. And that was kind of the only spot, I thought, in the sequence where you could maybe single if you feel the confidence to single in a 12-5 maiden claimer with horses that have, you know, gathered together 15 to 20 losses. If you felt comfortable doing that, then that obviously gave you some flexibility maybe to try and hit the thing multiple times. But I felt, and like we talked about Wednesday morning, that the likeliest single to me was Noble Intentions in the first leg, who was successful at a little over 2-1. But there were also other horses in that race that were bet. So that's my point, is that multiple horses were receiving action in each leg, and that kind of just, it waters down the ability of anyone to really smash the thing and go real narrow on a ticket from start to finish.
Well, we turn from Fonner and Tampa, I imagine, to Oaklawn. And, you know, we've got limited choices on the weekends right now. I think things will start to build back up, you know, at the end of the month, and you know, that will wait it out. But this card at Oaklawn, Nick, this is the goods.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, look, and you're seeing pretty much every day at Oaklawn, it's nothing but big fields left and right. I think yesterday it was a 9-race card. 7 races had 12 horses, and 1 had 8 and 1 had 9 or something like that. It was obviously very good betting opportunities. And tomorrow is no exception. In fact, this would have, of course, been the Arkansas Derby card, and so they went ahead with the 12 races that were in the condition book. And I mean, even though the Arkansas Derby may not be the centerpiece, it's still a very, very good bunch, and should present a lot of good chances.
Where do you want to start?
I mean, we can look at the late pick 5, since it includes the 2 stakes races.
Yep.
It starts with one of these typical races for tomorrow's card, a money allowance that looks like a pretty wide open event. And the interesting thing about this group is that I felt like most of the horses that were going to be interested in the early pace were towards the inside of the draw, and a lot of horses that want to do more of their running in the latter part are towards the outside. And I mean, I think favoritism will probably be split amongst probably Pickford, Proverb. I think to an extent you'll see some support for Mo Gotcha. All West, I think, will not be 20-1 like he is on the morning line, as he was a pretty impressive maiden winner last time and seems to be coming into it in improving form. There's not a lot of speed in here, which was my take, and so I felt like you probably wanted one of the horses towards the inside. I think that Gallant Plunger is dangerous. He was placed first through disqualification last time. That was a race where Wild Pulpit ended up causing some interference in the stretch. Wild Pulpit came back and won in his next start. Wasn't even the favorite, and usually horses coming off of disqualified maiden victories, so to speak, are bet heavily next time. And he was. He was 5-2, but he wasn't quite the favorite. I thought the Gallant Plunger was dangerous. Steve Asmussen was on a 44-start losing streak at Oaklawn and then won the late double yesterday. And, of course, we knew that was going to end eventually. It wasn't going to go on forever. But he obviously is positioned with a lot of nice-looking horses tomorrow. And this looked like a scenario to me where Ricardo Santana Jr. could just get this horse to the lead, and he may forget to stop. There are other horses that could show some speed. If you use Timeform US, the pace projector has Fast Talking forwardly placed, and Mo Gotcha. And I think that's all possible. But Gallant Plunger looks like he's playing in sprint speed. And to me, that's the type I think that you want to really focus on. I thought that Pickford was dangerous. I don't love his post position. I don't love the fact that he's not exactly terribly fond of the winner's circle. But he ran a good race last time, went second, and seems to be getting back to that top form for Jimmy DeVito. He's improved quite a bit, I thought, since relocating to this barn. And we'll see if maybe they go quickly enough in front of him. But, you know, I felt like in pretty much any scenario, this is a race where you wanted to be as wide as possible, because it does feel as if there are 5 or 6 win candidates.
Who, and you think Gallant Plunger the most eligible price?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought he's going to be the best value at his expected price. And I mean, but again, if you wanted to talk to me about Proverb or even Determinant, you
know, Determinant
big case set up last time, but still ran very well. He and Proverb, of course, both benefited from the pace. Proverb gets a pretty substantial upgrade in jockey to Joel Rosario, given his style and where he wants to be moving from off of it. So yeah, I mean, this card sort of encapsulates what you're going to see on this whole card, which is that, I mean, it's just race after race of deep, wide open events where you can make a case for a number of different horses, and you find yourself really looking for something that tilts you in one direction, because it's just that tight.
Well, and one of the biggest problems that we've got going into tomorrow, I looked at the forecast again. They're talking about cloudy in the morning, giving way to some occasional showers. So keep it in mind. They're calling it an 80% chance, and it just seems like, you know, the last several weeks that every time there's been a chance of rain in Hot Springs, we've gotten it. And these fields are all among the Oaklawn horses, obviously. These fields are just littered with horses that ran well recently on wet tracks. So all that does is further confuse you and you know, add to candidate scenarios.
Yeah, that's kind of been the story of this Oaklawn meet, right? It's like yesterday, the weather was beautiful. It was clear, and the track was fast, and you were trying to decipher form from horses that had two, three, sometimes even four starts in a row on wet surfaces, which gets very tricky, you know, and you want to be as forgiving as possible, but you also don't want to fall into the habit of saying, oh, well, that horse ran poorly last time on the wet track, and so he's going to run better on a dry track. Usually, you know, it's not always quite that simple, but we'll hope for the best and maybe get lucky. But I mean, I think if Oakland had a turf course, all we'd be hearing about in a normal year is how they lost so many turf races because it's rained so much. But we'll hope for the best and would rather obviously see a dry strip and things to be as fair as possible. In truth, the main track yesterday, believe it's only one surface, but the dirt at Oakland yesterday was pretty tilted toward front end types, which isn't atypical of that. Of that surface, but it wasn't quite a closers need not apply day, but they were a little bit up against it, and so that's one thing that might be evened out a little bit by a wet surface.
I'm going to just mention one horse here before we move on, and Randy Morse and Wild Poppet. There's a couple of things to like about this. 10-1, it happens to be a five-year-old that took forever to get to the races, didn't make a debut until he was four, and then promptly missed another 11 months. However, and then another 11 months. However, he's now run twice in a row, and he broke his maiden off that long layoff, Nick, by attending, you know, a solid, moderate-ish, solid pace, but he got disqualified. Then he did something that I really like, which is come right back from the DQ and win, and did it in an entirely different fashion, coming from well out of it. Now he stretches out. He's a Tappet out of an El Prado mare, and he's clearly in form and finally healthy. And at 10-1, I think Wild Poppet is a little clever in here.
Yeah, I mean, if you like Gallant Plunger, like I was saying, then you kind of have to like Wild Poppet. And
this
does seem like a scenario where he's gonna take to the added ground quite well. And, you know, there was a winner late on yesterday's card that was coming off of sprint races for Tom Amos and was stretching out to the mile and ended up looping the field around the turn and powering home. And that was a reminder that a lot of times, and this is admittedly a weakness in my handicapping, is that you can't always dismiss maybe like a what looks like a one-run closing sprinting type when they go the two-turn mile because they can still be effective sitting back and making one run. So, and that feels like Wild Poppet is that kind of horse. The other thing too is that, as I was saying, most of the speed in this field is drawn towards the inside, so he has the chance of maybe tucking in right behind them and getting that cozy stalking trip in the pocket, which would clearly make him very dangerous. And yeah, he's another horse in a race full of potential contenders that I think you'd want to include, especially at or around that morning line.
Gets us to the first of the two stakes, the Oaklawn Mile, and, you know, big, bulky field, 14 horses, some familiar names, some stakes experience, and this is the kind of race that draws you in to maybe experimenting, and I'm going to try to beat Tom, and then Tom's Detat wins by four, and you feel like an idiot.
Yeah, that was kind of how I felt, looking through it, looking at the alternatives, starting to envision how this race is going to be run. I thought to myself, there's no way he's going to lose. And I think, you know, Tom's Detat has been a very frustrating horse. I'm sure for his connections, a lot of times for people that have been fans of his, he's just not really put it together until later last year. And look, I think it's hard to deny at this point. There's something about Joel Rosario that fits this horse. And he clearly just did not perform at the same level for any other jockey. It's whether it's Rosario putting him on the pace like he did in the Fayette or taking him a little bit off of it in the Clark when the pace was a little bit quicker. They just seem to fit each other very well. And I think he's just a very, very likely winner of this race. I think it's going to take, if he's anywhere close to what he was towards the end of last year, it's going to take a pretty big move forward from any of his competition to beat him, given that he's versatile enough to be able to sit back and make one run. There's a lot of speed in here. And so that's one area where you trust Rosario probably more than anybody in the game, because, I mean, ticking these horses off one by one, obviously Slick Silver is kind of a one-way speed horse. Mr. Money wants to be forwardly placed. Pioneer Spirit has speed. Boldor stretching out, you know, one after another. Snapper Sinclair is generally forwardly placed and has Giroux. So one after another, you're looking at horses that want to be close to the lead, and that's clearly going to help, I think, Tom Zaytaw. It's also going to help a horse like Bankit, who I thought was a little bit up against it last time trying to rally outside in the Essex. I know that some people may say that he kind of left his race on the track, two back in the Razorback, and coming up just shy of Warrior's Charge. But I feel like on a fairer surface, ideally on a dry surface as well, I thought Bankit would be dangerous given the pace scenario. But as far as multi-race plays go, I think this is a situation where you really have to lean on Tom Zaytaw. And even though it looks like a big competitive field on paper, I'll be very surprised if he's anywhere close to 3-1.
What do you do with Kershaw at 20-1? Came back from a 7-month layoff and wired a field at Santa Anita in February. And what's a little problematic is that his four wins, all have come on the lead. Although he's run some races, at this kind of a configuration where he has sat and come with a run. He's the horse that I've got the dollar sign and a question mark next to.
Yeah, I mean, if he was drawn inside and you could see a scenario where maybe he was going to be able to get to the lead and might find some other riders asleep at the switch, but boy, crossing over from the 12 feels like it's going to be very, very tough when you've got Home Run Trick and Slick Silver, as I was saying before, who really are just one-way speed types.
Right.
He's going to have to stalk. And if you feel like there's upside based on the good comeback race, then I wouldn't be talked off of him if you think he can stalk and maybe get in the mix. I'm not sure if he's going to be quite good enough to win, but I think that he clearly took a step forward last time, and the time off did him very well. So, if something crazy things happen a lot of times when these big, bulky fields get together and it looks like there's a lot of speed on paper. It usually ends with me cursing about how no one went to the lead. But I'll be surprised if that's the case in here.
Interesting group beyond the favorite. Improbable comes back here, and he's going to have to figure out a trip under Drayden Van Dyke as well. So a lot going on, but clearly Tom's the Tot, looking at the rest of this sequence too, feels like a horse that everybody or a lot of people are going to lean heavily on to save in a spot. We go from here to the 10th race. It's the first of two divisions of a maiden special going 8.5. And these are both very interesting. Talked about this yesterday with Steve Askin. Feels like this on paper is the heavier headed of the two events.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. There's really no standout in this one. It feels like there's a little bit more depth, but that's also because nobody really is all that encouraging in terms of making you feel like, oh, that's absolutely the horse that I want to bet. You know, you have a horse like Urbanite, who I thought looked somewhat dangerous, got some support on debut at Churchill last fall, and then in running fourth in that race looked like a horse that at some point would probably be effective on the dirt, and then Asmussen ran him long on the turf, which was a little strange, not really something that you see terribly much from this barn, and this is a Bodemeister out of a Bernardini mare, now gets back to the dirt and has a bit of a spotty work tab. I thought he was a little interesting. I wanted to include him at least. I think favoritism in here is probably going to go to Dean Martini. I guess Hunt the Front will get some support. He's got a bad post position, but he certainly has the right rider, given his style. And then you've got a first-time starter and wartime hero who's got just a terrific pedigree, being by Empire Maker out of St. John's River, of course, who lost the Kentucky Oaks by a head to Plum Pretty. It cost me to pick four, but not that I'm bitter or anything. It is 9 years later. But that horse is outposted as well. And Eddie Forever is now off a layoff with Diodoro, but he's got dirt races that are clearly good enough to win, and we've seen the new arrivals to this barn do very, very well. Specifically at Oaklawn, I thought that you could make a little bit of a case for Hugo getting the blinkers on. Clearly a horse that works well, given a lot of the handily gate drills. They're trying to put more speed into him. Fernando de la Cruz, generally a pretty aggressive jockey, so you can feel like maybe he's going to be making a bid for the early lead. And then the second and third place finishers from that Blackberry Wine blowout maiden win, And they kind of got towed home by BlackBerry One in the sense that their buyer figures look a little inflated. But What a Country actually ran pretty well and was never all that far off the pace, and then did finish with some interest. He was over seven lengths clear of the rest of the field. So, I mean, if you take BlackBerry Wine out, we'd be talking about how What a Country was probably an interesting horse in a one other then. So, as you can clearly see, I'm going to use as many horses in here as possible. That's a big part of the reason why I want a single times d'etat and just move on from this race altogether, because it is just impossible, in my opinion, to have any confidence in any direction to go.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up Hugo, because one of the absolute institutions among owners and breeders, Dash Goff, owns this one, and Jimmy DeVito trains. And we had really had a memorable visit several years ago at Hot Springs with Dash Goff, and of course famous going back with his father and No Double, and one of the games and one of the region's great owners. The 11th race is the Oaklawn Stake, and okay, it's not the Arkansas Derby, but it is a very interesting and well-matched set.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a heck of a lot short of what the Arkansas Derby would have been. And, I mean, I guess you can start talking about Thousand Words, because he should be the favorite. And a lot of that will have to do, of course, with Bob Baffert, who's been tremendously successful at Oakland over the last 5 years. And the fact that this horse is proven in the sense that he was undefeated going into that salty San Felipe. And didn't he run poorly? I think those horses are better than him for the most part. I really don't think Thousand Words is a whole heck of a lot. I mean, I think he's a good fit for a race like this, which even though it's kind of the Arkansas Derby's little brother, it's more of a grade three type of race. And I think that's where he fits just from a class perspective. I think that he's a horse you have to include, but I mean, as you can see, I have no confidence in really his ability to win. It bothers me that Royal Act came back and ran so poorly at Fairgrounds. And that basically this horse has won. He won two graded stakes over a horse that came back and performed poorly against better competition, and another one who hangs every time he runs. So it's just not. And came back and ran poorly in the Risen Star anyway. So he doesn't inspire a whole lot of confidence. I felt like in trying to go through the Southwest in the Rebel form, you were looking for horses, especially in the Rebel, who were outside and making prolonged outside moves. He didn't make a prolonged outside move, but I feel like Basin is going to run a lot better second off the layoff. I think he's drawn very favorably on the inside. And, you know, this is another situation where we could find ourselves talking about Florent Giroux being aggressive from an inside post. You know, I feel like if you're Steve Asmussen and you're using him, you're planning on this horse going to the lead. And if he's not on the lead, you plan on him being very, very close. And that, to me, is enough to kind of settle here as a top pick. I would say that you need to be, I think you need to be a few deep in the pick four or the pick five. There's clearly going to be early competition for him. Obviously, Sir Rick will be somewhat forwardly placed. I think you could see the same thing from Thousand Words. Tyshawn was victorious wire-to-wire last time. He's not quite quick enough, I think, to get to the lead in here. And then you have the Gold Street on the far outside, who you're putting another kind of aggressive speed type of jockey on. And this guy was victorious two back wire-to-wire. So you're going to see some speed, I think, from top to bottom. But what I like is that Basin is really drawn on the toesy inside and should move forward, I think, second off the layoff. So as far as like big price alternatives, I thought that Background's maiden win two back, that was back on the Southwest card, the nightcap that day, which we talked about in detail that morning. I thought he was impressive. I really don't think he embarrassed himself last time. Again, didn't break well and ended up stuck in a little bit of a disadvantageous spot. So I think there are reasons to believe that he can run a little bit better, and he's going to be every bit of that 12 or 15 to 1. I also thought, and I think you mentioned this horse when we were talking about the Gotham, that Flapjack was a little clever and might be a horse that can take a step forward second off the layoff as well. I'm unsure exactly how far this horse wants to go, but I would be willing to give him another shot, given that he surfaces here off of a comeback race in the Gotham that was probably a little bit better than it looks. So he might be one that can get in there at a big price and get a share of it at, you know, 30, 25, 30 to 1.
I completely agree. And when you're looking for certain form clues and development curves, Flapjack comes back after being gone September 7th to March 7th, comes back and gets on dirt for the first time since his debut at Ellis in July of last year. And immediately, by any measurement you use on figs, runs a career best. And it was wide, and you could see was in striking distance, and you hoped, you know, I mean, I bet him at 50 to 1. And he basically, you could see, he simply got tired chasing from the outside. And I love what I can see from the work that's been going on at Keeneland, and I absolutely want to include Flapjack on the play. But you pretty much hit everybody I'm interested in. Basin, 1,000 words, and Flapjack background. I might sub, I don't know, I might sub Farmington Road, who I'll give a chance to from Eclipse and Todd Pletcher, who, you know, was coming late in that Risen Star division, and now adds blinkers. And Todd certainly, you know, his record might not be the same as Baffert's going to Oaklawn, but he's had his share of Rebel Arkansas Derby kind of successes. Let's go to the nightcap, the second division of that mile and a 16th maiden special pair, and we've got some horses in here. The 7th and the 10th are the divisions. The nightcap is that money allowance.
Yeah, and this was another situation, of course, where you're looking at a big competitive field of a broken record, talking about this over and over. But I actually thought that, I mean, if this race is run the way it looks to on paper, there's not a whole heck of a lot of speed. I feel like Charlie's Archangel will probably be somewhat forwardly placed, maybe with Popular Kid and or Hunk of Burning Love, something like that. Sonny Smack is supposed to win this race. You know, and I know there are a lot of other win candidates, there's a lot of contenders, but, I mean, wet track, dry track, this is a horse that's really gotten into form for the, I believe, the eldest Von Hemmel, and it comes in off a good second-place finish behind an accomplished older horse in Lambo, where he really didn't have much of a chance in terms of how that pace unfolded. So I think coming back off of that, I felt like Sonny Smack was supposed to win. It's kind of funny that he was a horse that really hadn't shown a whole great amount of interest in winning, and then suddenly put those two together at this Oaklawn meet, and now looks to be a little bit of a, I guess, a refurbished five-year-old, so to speak. But I felt like he was going to be the... He's the most dangerous to me. Look, I mean, I think whether you're using speed figures, using trips, you're doing pretty much anything, you can find a lot of alternatives in here. I think that Charlie's Archangel is an interesting horse because he might just be quick enough to get the lead, and that's enough to make him dangerous. Obviously, pace is clearly going to be important, as there is not an abundance of it. I'm hopeful that there's just enough to kind of scrimmage early and set things up for Sonny Smack. But, I mean, people are going to probably bring up Lemonite off the layoff. He's a stakes type that has performed well, clearly around two turns, and needs to be in a slightly softer spot from a class perspective. And then I mentioned Hunk of Burning Love as a horse that could show some speed. It's clear that off the claim from Carl Broberg last fall, Ingrid Mason has moved this horse forward given the way he ran last time. And even getting into a little traffic early, he showed some speed before tiring. I think you'll see him forwardly placed. You could also see Colonel's Dark Temper a little bit forwardly placed after he's been so unsuccessful. Coming from a little bit off of it, I think Calvin Burrell might be a little bit more aggressive tomorrow. So this is another race, I think, where you'll find yourself trying to avoid going too deep. I'm going to be a little bit bolder and try and lean on Sonny Smack because I have a feeling that my tickets are going to be pretty wide heading into this leg, and it's going to necessitate a little bit more of a judicious approach.
Nick Tamaro, everybody. NTAM, N-T-A-M-M, 1215. And Nick, I appreciate it. Thanks for all the terrific work this week. Best of luck this weekend. Stay safe, and we'll talk next week.
You bet. Whichever way you celebrate and or observe, happy holidays to everyone, and glad to have been on with you. Have a good weekend. Stay safe, and we'll talk next week.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, and of course, Easter, very big, you know, very big in the Italian households. And how are you? Are you getting together with your folks? Ah, we lost Nick. I know he's been seeing his dad, so
FaceTime kind of thing.
Oh, there we go. We lost you for a second.
We're gonna eat the same thing and do kind of a FaceTime.
I brought that up earlier with there were some Passover Seders that were being conducted that way, apparently, and that was fun. We did not, Tina and I, as I called her the other night, Matzo Ball Barbie, very impressive. She blew past the over-under number on matzo balls. I was very impressed. We'll see how it goes. Maybe a starch fest for us. She'll make mac and cheese, and I'll make au gratin potato with the ham. I got a beautiful ham.
There you go.
Because I am a pork-eating yid, I'll tell you. Don't. remember that great Simpson?
I'm not going to touch this one, but I've met a hell of a lot more that are than aren't. But you know, I'm into reform too. I like that.
I'm the first to admit it. That's one of my brother and I. It's one of our favorite Simpsons. You know, the one where Lisa goes vegetarian and Homer says to her, "So you're not going to eat bacon? No, Dad. You're not going to eat ribs? No, Dad. What about ham? Dad, they're all from the same animal." To which Homer replies, "Sure, Lisa, all from the same magical animal."
That's right. That's the truth. You're not getting an argument about any pork products from an Italian, so yeah.
No. Everything but never. The squeal.
That's right.
Nick Tavaro, everybody. Let's take a break. Coming up toward the bottom of the hour, Rick Hammerly is going to join us, and we're going to hear from Janine Zahadi, who I haven't talked to forever. And then later, we've got Scully, DeRosa, Privman, Serling. Holy cow. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky Tracks for Horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Don't wait for promises, Mary. They can't be measured up enough. You weigh your hat so heavy. That's why you fumble when you walk. Yeah. If you want me to disappear, I'll make it worth your while. You seem special, but have some patience. That's just one thing I need to know. Will you still love me in the moment? Will you stay for me?
Look at coffee. Back here, bottom of the hour, 90 minutes in, 90 to come, make it 88 minutes to come here on this Good Friday, Easter weekend edition at the races. And Rick Hammerly standing by, home now, very much settled in. And Hammer, good morning.
Thanks, Steve. Settled in is a good word because that's what we're doing, settling in. And a lot of stuff going on. You find a lot of stuff to do around the house. You know what I found out as well is not only are you with your, you know, your family or your loved ones or whoever you may be bunking down with to see how good you get along again, which in this case is actually good, you get to find out if you truly like your house or where you're living, right? And I do, and I'm really enjoying the house, you know, just going to different rooms, and we have enough spaces. We can separate if we have to. And although it's been raining the last 4 or 5 days here, nice to get out in the backyard, you know, do a little reading out there, walk around the neighborhood. So yeah, if you don't like your house, you're finding out now that maybe when this is over, it's time to move. But anyway, we're all doing our thing here, and you know, it's actually very cool. I'm very proud of the community here in L.A. And I think in California in general too, that everyone seems to be doing the right thing. You look outside, you don't see anybody going by, and when I do go on my little neighborhood walks, very rarely do I see a car. And when you go to the store, there's a few people in, but not too bad. So very, very, you know, people are taking this well, and haven't really heard a whole lot of complaints with people I've talked to, and including you and around the country. So, you know, good for us that we are handling it well. I know it is only April 10th, but, you know, got a good feel about the whole thing.
Well, you mentioned the wet. Jay Hovde was with us earlier. Jay said it's pouring down by him, down toward San Diego. And so, you know, frankly, the weekend may have been a washout given the way Santa Anita was managing wet weather. Let me hammer, we talk, let's also bring in Janine Sahadi. And it's been way too long since we've had an opportunity to talk to Janine. For those that are more recent fans of the game and horse players, you missed one of the sharpest horsemen on the West Coast, because Janine's list of big winners probably starts with Lethe Justice and Golden Ballet, Fastness, The Deputy, just a terrific career. And Janine, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Janine. How are you?
Hi, how are you? It's raining
good
there, right?
What's that? Yeah, it's raining up here. Janine's down in Del Mar. Yes, it's raining here up in L.A., but talked to Steve earlier this week and really wanted to have Janine on for a couple reasons. She is, well, quick introduction, Janine. Well, Gina and I have been friends since actually I got back to California for a long time, so we've stayed in contact during the whole situation. And, you know, many of you know or don't know, if you don't, Janine's trained for many, many years, won the Santa Anita Derby with the Deputy, won a couple Breeders' Cup races, two sprints, as a matter of fact, with Lethe Justice and and Elmhurst and lots of other wins, but was a fixture on the Southern California circuit for a long time and retired, I think, in 2010, 11, somewhere around there.
Yep.
And she didn't go away. And that's one of the reasons I want to have her on. She's been very, very active in the Edwin Gregson Foundation, which has been around for about 20 years. And also very active in racing in general. She works down at Del Mar. And the Edwin Gregson Foundation is just a super, super group out here in California. And their whole reason for being is to basically enhance the life of the backstretch worker in California and their families. And they do a lot of fundraising. Janine will go a little bit further, but I wanted to let everybody know, without her having to pat herself on the back, what her and her group do. Mostly a lot of scholarships. They give a lot of money to families and their children on the backstretch to go to school and continue with their education. But with the shift in the situation here in California, they've been doing a lot of hands-on stuff with the backstretch workers. And I thought, sometimes we, as a general public, when things are bad, we want to help. We don't know what to do, and we don't know where to give, and we just don't know, how we can express ourselves. But I'd like Janine to talk about her group there, and what we could do as just regular people that want to help, where we can maybe write a check or go out and help fundraise. So if we could start with that with Janine, I think that's just to show what is going on here, kind of behind the scenes. That people aren't just sitting on their hands. There are groups out there trying to help the backstretch workers, which are obviously being affected more than anybody in this cause.
Well, I'll just jump in and say we've been doing this, like you said, for 20 years, and absolutely my focus and our board's focus is always the backstretch workers along with their children and families. I've always been very political when it came to racing, and I'm passionate about trying to, better the lives of these kids who are, in many cases, the first in the family to go to college. I think education is vital. It's interesting, though, with this isolation thing, we've run into a couple of situations recently that I didn't even think of. Some of these kids were forced to do their classes online. A few of the kids didn't have computers. So crazy as it seems, that's the kind of thing that we do. So we've gotten some calls. We've made arrangements. We've got them their laptops. They're back doing their classes and studying. We've had some amazing success stories that I'm just beyond proud of. It keeps me in touch with the backside. I see these guys that I've known forever, and they'll go riding by on a horse if I'm out at the track, and they'll say, "Oh, Patrona, my daughter's doing great." So it's a real, everybody on our board, Gail Gregson, Samantha Siegel, Sarah Kelly, Jay Hovday's on the board. Privman's been very, very helpful. Stephanie Hironis, Jill Baffert. I mean, we have an amazing bunch of people, and Angie Carmona, who is at Santa Anita, is vital for the Edwin J. Gregson Foundation to work so well. She's in touch with all of the workers on a daily basis. So in this crisis, in addition to a lot of other things that we do during the normal course of business, we've tried to step up and do some vouchers for the men and women on the backside that they can use in the rec hall or the track kitchen. Santa Anita's went out last week, so every backstretch employee got the vouchers. We try to, the rec hall does a lot of business there. We have staples there, candy bars, sodas, things. It's kind of like their little mini market, if you will. And that's one thing that I really want to convey to everybody that's listening, and most people don't understand this. The racetrack has been on an island for as long as I've been a kid. I mean, I went to the races when I was young. It's hard to get into the barn area, and this is a community back there that lives, eats, and breeds horses. And so I'm just really, we're taking care of Golden Gate this week, and then we'll probably come back next week with another round at Santa Anita, because it looks like this is going to go on for quite some time. I heard you talking about the rain, and yes, they would have been washed out anyway. But the problem with all of this is that without the funding and revenue generated through racing, it makes it very difficult for that community to survive. We have medical and dental trailers that are free of charge to all the backstretch workers and their families that Noble Threewood actually founded, another star. We need the revenue badly in order to be able to keep doing, you know, the backstretch needs to be funded through revenues and gambling and racing in order for it to work well. So there's a real sense of fright and fear. The uncertainty is obviously a major, major problem. I just hope that there's some resolution in the short term. These people live there. They are social distancing every day of every year, consistently. Our guys wear gloves and masks every day. They're in contact with, you know, poultice and furosine and, you know, things that are, you know, medicinal for horses, but can really rough up your hands. And they spend their days with horses, not with people. That's really what I wanted to convey to, you know, everybody listening, is that this is not a, I recognize the severity of the pandemic. I get it. But California seems to have really done a good job of keeping, you know, staying at home and doing what they're supposed to do. We have a vast population, and, you know, the numbers are pretty good. So nobody gets into that barn area. We have security guards, and you need to be licensed. So it really is its own little infrastructure. But in order for the infrastructure to not crumble, we need revenue. So, you know, I know everybody's working hard. I hope everybody's working hard to get us back racing again. And then, of course, in California, we have a group of I call them the wackos, the extremists, the crazy. They're very passionate about ending anything, horse racing. They were passionate about the circus and SeaWorld, and their behavior is really, really disgusting. Their language is atrocious. They show no respect to the industry as a whole. If you want to listen to something horrifying, listen to a CHRB meeting, and you will understand my disdain for these people. I have all of their discussions screenshotted. The language is not really, it's not up to par, and it's sad that they don't get the fact that these people rely on horses and the industry to survive. I'm not just speaking for the workers. I'm speaking for the owners. The investment on the owners is, you know, vast, and trainers are in a real pickle right now. And all of the backstretch workers, the front side employees, you've got the gate crew, you've got the valets, you've got the box seat people. No spectators. We can do it. We did it before with no spectators, and they are racing with no spectators at other revenues around other venues around the country. So it can be done, and I'm just hoping that maybe, something will give in short order. I don't really know what else to say. It's quite dire, if you ask me.
A couple of things, Janine, about the circumstance and the situation in general, and then some other external pressures that are really coming to bear. And you know, even though you're not managing a shed right now, you are the horseman liaison during the Del Mar seasons, and so you're absolutely in tune with the all the difficulties that the horsemen are encountering. And last week, the situation of having to come up with over $1,200 per horse for workman's comp, the latest in a series of sort of unprecedented demands on people right now.
Yeah, that kind of rubbed me the wrong way, because obviously the shortfall has been, we didn't just turn up with a $2 million plus shortfall overnight. So my concern is, why now? It's not a foregone conclusion that everybody will qualify for the PPP program, the SBA grants and loans. you know, it's just not a fact that this is going to work. At $1,200 per horse assessment for any barn, I don't care if it's Baffert, Sadler, or the smallest guy on the racetrack, it's a staggering amount of money. And I just, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to try to use the pandemic and the borrowing power, or the, you know, probable borrowing power, to try to fix the situation. I probably shouldn't have gotten into this mess to begin with. I will admit that there are, you know, some issues always. There's a lack of knowledge when it comes to workman's comp. Workman's comp in California is always a lot more expensive. Everything in California is more expensive. So when I say we're on an island, we're on an island. I mean, gas, we're still paying $3.15 a gallon for gas, for unleaded. So when you've got horses shipping and, you know, our, the feed, everything is more expensive, and consequently workman's comp is too. So there's not a lot built into the day rate of these guys. I talk to a lot of them, you know, on a regular basis, and they're scared, because if this were to come to bear, they would not be able to survive this. And there's a lot of them that wouldn't be able to survive this.
Well, Janine and Steve too, you know, we talked about a lot of things that depend on handle, and including stabling and vanning and the health care, of course, and the Breeders' Awards, purses. But part of the handle went to, workman's comp fund that relieved some of the pressure on the trainers to, when their bill came. So obviously without racing, without any type of handle coming in, that fund is being depleted a little bit. And you can correct me if I'm not. I think there's a call today amongst the TOC, the Thoroughbred Owners of California group that oversees many of these funds. There may be some discussion about some relief with some of that money regarding the workman's comp. Not sure yet, but there's a call at 11 o'clock today, which will be
11 Pacific.
Yeah, and any licensed owner or trainer is able to call that. It's out on Twitter. Bloodhorse tweeted it out. Samantha tweeted it out, and it's a conference call. I think Frable will be on the call. Nick Alexander, Gary Fenton, Greg Avioli. I'm not sure who else, but hopefully there. All of these issues need to be discussed, and hopefully there'll be some kind of a resolution today. I agree with that. I hope that's the case.
I gave the number earlier this morning. Let me do it again. 2 o'clock Eastern. 11 o'clock Pacific, 877-229-8493. And then when prompted, the conference code is 117-114. 877-229-8493, conference code 117-114. And Corona conference, as well as racing updates, and they've been having these, you know, virtually in every jurisdiction, New York last week, and we followed up with Jen Shah. You can also, you know, utilize the page at ntra.com. They've got all the resources as well. Dean Dorton, the accounting firm that consults to NTRA, they've got a resource page as well, and I'm sure the TOC will provide information today, 11 o'clock Pacific, 2 o'clock Eastern.
One other thing that's been kind of in the news a little bit was some discussion or non-discussion of races moving from Santa Anita over to Los Alamitos, is because we know Los Alamitos is still running their quarter horse program uninterrupted, as they're in Orange County and we are in L.A. County. So it's up to the individual county to decide, health department to decide what's going on. And they're running at Los Al. So some conflicting information where there's reports that there's been discussions had, and then Jack Liebau came out yesterday. Jack Liebau from Los Alamitos said that there hadn't been any discussions and that basically it's not going to happen. So You know, that was dashed. And nothing happens quick out here anyway. You have to have meetings and, you know, 30-day notices and, you know, public comments. And so that couldn't have happened overnight anyway. But, you know, some solutions they're looking into. Hopefully that maybe is a little bit on the table. But there is also some hope talking around to some of the people involved that the racing is not shut down indefinitely at Santa Anita, that this may have been just a pause. Hopefully there's discussion going on with maybe a list of things that they want covered, and there's a possibility of maybe racing coming back by the end of the month or the first part of May. So there's a little hope there. But you know, the fight just needs to keep going. And if it doesn't, as Janine said, you know, each day that goes by is just tough on every facet of the industry, the owners, the trainers, the workers. And I want to stress, like Janine did, it's not just the backstretch workers, the people that work at the racetrack. There's people that have been, you know, invested their lives at working at the racetrack, from the ushers to the program sellers, like you said, to the gate crew, to, you know, just anybody that you see at the racetrack every day. I mean, that's their job. And it's not there right now, so they're not collecting a paycheck either. So, you know, very important for us. I mean, and selfishly, you know, there's a ton of businesses out there that aren't up and running. But to have this one, have the rug pulled out from under you after doing everything right here is a pretty tough pill to swallow.
Well, and I'm under the impression that this really is a situation that could go forward safely without spectators. And I feel awful for the restaurants, you know, but there a lot of, I know people are supporting their local communities. Everybody's doing their part. I do takeout every night. This is a situation though where it probably would work. And the frustration for me is, you know, like the Arboretum right across the street, is open for business. They're selling tickets online. I recognize that is a county, you know, it just seems nonsensical to me that right across the street you can have thousands of people walking around when the sun's out, even though they're wearing masks. They charge for parking, they charge for tickets online, and I don't, you know, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. PETA offices are still open and functioning. You know, there are things that are deemed essential, dog shelters. Dog shelters have been running effectively throughout all this, and people are adopting dogs. You know, everybody's doing their part, but it sort of seems like there's just been a negative spin when it comes to racing, and you've got jockeys and jocks agents, and, you know, think about these owners. My God, they have invested, you know, and you think about the revenue lost in Arcadia alone, or if it was a situation down here. Racetracks generate money and taxes, and it's they give back to their community. So it's a pretty disappointing situation for me. But there's a lot of people that are being hurt, and it would be one way to maybe. I don't think we need any more unemployment issues out here, and it's a vast number of people that are affected by this. You're not talking about, you know, just the backstretch workers. So it's a we'll see what happens on the conference call today. Got to stay positive, right?
Well, absolutely. And Janine, while we've got you too, you know, a couple of things sort of just kind of seem to come up here that prompts me to you know, ask you about the way in which you made the decision to stop training, because you left the, you know, the day-to-day portion of training on your own terms, and it seems like you identified a lot of the issues that, you know, here years later are only more acute. We've been discussing them with Chuck Simon, who himself has left training to work for HBPA in Florida and represent the horsemen down in South Florida. But you sensed some issues coming to the fore ahead of many.
Yeah, I recognize there was a lot of rampant cheating going on, if that's what you're getting to.
Yeah, and other issues. Other issues, too. Yeah. The mega barns. The mega, you know, you only had enough horses that you could put your hands on in a day. You were never interested in having, you know, 120 horses.
No, I wasn't, because I like to be able to see when you get that big and spread out. It's not fun for me, but that's just my own personal opinion. You know, look, I think racing has probably dropped the ball on a lot of issues over the last 25-plus years. I remember I went on Real Sports with Brian Gumbel when it had just started with the first, you know, with Arthur Hancock. And Arthur and I, nobody talked to us. Nobody at the track wanted to talk to me. And I've always tried to stay political. I was the president of the Trainers Association for 8 years. I think we did a good job. I was proud of the work we did. I think that everybody in the industry needs to start communicating and needs to do a better job of trying to improve the product. You know, California has been singled out in the last year because of all of the BS that's gone out on out here. It was a bad winter last year. Lots of contributing factors. I certainly am not blaming. I don't blame just trainers for what happened last year. There were a lot of factors and a lot of people that didn't jump up and take responsibility for the events that happened out here last winter. But I think that probably now, more than ever, everybody needs to get together and play the game the way that it's supposed to be played. And if you really, really do love animals, which that's our goal, right? We love our horses and we love what we do and we're passionate about it. And, you know, these guys, everybody gives their lives to do this. It's not a 9-to-5 job. You don't get vacations. You're up at the crack of dawn. But you know, the fear is real. If you decide one day that you're going to step up and be vocal about, you know, cleaning the sport up and all the rest of that, in some instances you're ostracized. So, I think that the federal indictments were probably
around, and when you do what I did as being a racing secretary, you want people to tell you the truth about, you know, what's going on anywhere, and she always did. And anyone that has known Janine or been close to Janine at all times, we've had a few shouting matches over the years. But, you know, they end right there. But always got, you know, when it came down to talking about horses or what horses she had or needed or wanted or what was going on certain places on the backside, I got the answer and I knew what she said was right. So she's a straight shooter and some people don't like that, but I need that. And that's why we always got along. And I knew she would be very good at telling it like it is with what's going on here. So. The meeting's good. Last week, you know, we had the Oaklawn couple races, and you know, quickly that Phoenix the Fierce race, where you know we innocently, if we liked them as we talked about them last week, innocently out of nowhere you got kissed up and got another score, and then turn around and we go to Fawner Park and we have that pick five and kind of. That first leg, a little questionable call there, got taken down, and it's amazing how things do even out in this game, sometimes not as quickly. But, you know, my only comment about that is you had Chris on, and you know, good for him for coming on to make an explanation. But my question there is, if they left the horse up, was he going to come on and they have to explain that? I don't think so. So, anyway, we'll leave that alone. But we had a pick five earlier in the week at Fawner, a pick five at Tampa, and so there's been some action out there for guys.
Sure.
I guess I've gotten onto this head-to-head stuff on Derby Wars, and I'm up half the night handicapping a Tampa card today, which is virtually impossible, and I've been doing some of that with that and Fawner, which keeps you going, and we got the Oakland card this weekend. I heard you talking. To earlier this morning, was it with Ed?
With Nick.
Nick Cameron. But he can analyze a race and boom in 2 seconds and get over it real well. I try to listen to some, but I don't want to listen to all of it because I don't want to say exactly what he did. But a couple of the stake races that did a little flip flop, the Oaklawn Mile, which originally was going to be at the end, has, with the movement of the Oakland handicap to the end, it just made sense to make this kind of a little semi-prep for it. And then, of course, today was going to be the day of the Arkansas Derby, and then move the three-year-old race for people who were still looking for, you know, had their three-year-olds home for a race that day, to move that. So a couple of prep races coming up. The mile, a little trickier. Remember, that race is only a mile, that Oakland mile, meaning it starts and finishes at the 16th pole. So probably helps to be a little more prominent. I've noticed that. I mean, they turn for home and it's over type of thing. So closers do not do that well there. I see some preps in some of these horses. Mr. Money, I think he maybe needs one. And maybe this is the time to beat Tom Stittad as well. If he goes into the next one, it'll be very tough. Although he can win at a mile, he's got the right post, he's got the right speed. I'm looking a little bit maybe for the local horse, Pioneer Spirit, to continue his run of good races he's thrown in here. And maybe at a little bit bigger price. I don't have the morning line, but he's running Dance Every Dance, the fifth season, the Razorback, the Essex, coming back here. He's got the right style, and maybe he's a little bit more fresh, fit, and ready to roll than the other ones. Not there with class. Then you got Improbable. Yet Improbable was literally a step away from shipping out for the Essex out to Oakland, decided against it. Went in the Santana Mile at Santa Anita, got caught in the old cancellation trick, so he was ready to go. I think the mile hits him more in the head for sure on the comeback. The 14 hole, I don't know, he's going to be gunning the whole time, so, you know, whatever, he's going to have to be in the front anyway. But maybe a chance to take advantage of some of these horses that are coming back. I heard you mention Kershaw this morning. Might be a type of a horse to look at, but a real good race there. The three-year-old race at the usual suspects. How long ago was it that Thousand Words was Baffert's number one horse? Remember that a few months ago? And all of a sudden, he's hanging in there at number four, I think, right now with the undefeated horses and Authentic there, too. So Thousand Words, honest type. He's not quite as fast as Baffert's other one. Still going to take a beating here. I think he's going to be tough just with the Baffert situation. Basin on his second comeback. And if you're looking for a horse with a decent price who's got some local history, Tayshan came back. He did win in the mud, which, like you said, 50-50 if it's going to be muddy. Ran a good number. Rosario jumps on board. Might be another horse to look at. But good card at Saturday. I'm glad to see everyone is supporting racing wherever it may be out there. And, we're keeping our heads up, and we really are trying to get some stuff done, especially out here, privy to a few more things as we go along. And, you know, trying to help a little bit what I can behind the scenes and with people like Janine and the Edward Gregson Foundation. Look that up, the Edward Gregson Foundation on the Internet. And if you want to, you know, write a check or give a few bucks, it's just good to know that it's going to the right places. So thanks again, Steve, for letting us get the word out and have a little fun while we're at it.
No, it's terrific. And I put the Gregson, you got Cal Gregson to follow on Twitter, and the Gregson Foundation link I also sent out in a tweet as well. And GregsonFoundation.com/donation/backslash. You can go to my Twitter. It's being retweeted by quite a few people. Jay Pribman is next. Jay has been long associated with it. In fact, between Jay Hovde, Jay Pribman, and Janine Sahadi, we had about half the board of the Gregson Foundation today. And Hammer, I appreciate it. Stay safe, and
I got three more things. Now these are okay. So since we've all been home, I've dug in, as we all have, in the closet and found a few things from years past. I'm going to give you two games,
couple
games that we've been playing. It's pretty fun. One is Password. You know,
love Password,
right?
We love Password.
In the back of the thing and playing Password. I mean, it's great, simple. And last night we broke into Scattergories, which is another game it's like a list game. But anyway, something different. And then, you got to have fun. You got to have games, right? And then an activity. I'm going to give everybody an activity that I started 2 days ago, and I'm trying to learn how to fly a drone, a little mini drone. And start small because it does crash. And I've been watching YouTube videos, and Lindsay and I out in the backyard. We had to graduate to the park because, a little bit less more instructions out there. But anyway, something different to do, and I'm just throwing that out there because, you know what? They would never have the time or probably do some of this stuff. So there you go. Passwords, categories, and learning to fly a drone. Just something to do during to pass the time.
I love it. Seth, I'm glad you said this because Seth Merrow saved an edition of Password when we used to go to his family house in Maine for a couple of days at a time. And in the closet, they had all the kinds of board games, and they had a Password. And I, when they sold the house, I said to Seth, I said, "What are you doing with?" He says, "Oh, I guess we'll give them to Goodwill or something." I said, "Well, save me that Password game." So he saved it for me, but it's over at his apartment in Boston. So it's funny you say that. I'll send out a very funny link to Password. And of course, those of you that are Betty White fans, Betty White's husband, Alan Ludden, the longtime host of Password, and they met on when she was a panelist. And those of us of a certain age, Password, yeah. and to tell the truth, that's another another favorite.
So anyway, got to have a little fun. So thanks again, Steve, and good luck, everybody, this weekend.
Rick Hammerly, everybody, away they go on your Twitter. Let's take a break. We're about 10 minutes into hour three. Jay Pribman next. Then some Ed DeRosa and James Scully. We'll get some opinions from them as well. And if we got time, a quick push for tomorrow's Fox Sports 1 broadcast, America's Day at the Races as well. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.